Dr. Robin Rowland.
Thank you, Paul. That's great. I didn't know you were going to have a meeting, so good to be able to read something for you. Been up at Kitchen Arts Week and it's full of energy, and now we're all really up there. I'm going to read a poem from my first book of poetry called Silence in Its Tongue. And this is a book, this is a poem about Dennis. It's about loneliness, actually. And, I always had this idea I would go to Dennis, with the lover. All my life I wanted to go and travel down the canal on a gondola. So I ended up going with my two sons, my two and they're not actually in the poem, I'll tell you that. I'm not going to get a guernsey there. But the mentions of domesticity, trying to get away from domesticity, of course, relate to the story of single parenthood. Anyway, it's called Venice and it's for you. Sirens thrill along mute canals near midnight. I count the required scene for flood warning. Water laps intimate under the window of Hotel Traiaki, swelling across cobbled fondamenta beneath. I watch from the second floor, knowing others hoist quickly their chairs to the ceiling, somewhere in ground floor rooms. The sea is making inroads across islands of disbelief. Lovers drink from each other's lips between sparse street lamps, feet soaked in salt. Here I am only lost walking, never on the water. Hail came suddenly in the afternoon, lightning jolting the boat from Murano, shattering talk and the bare uplifted faces. I remember your eyes. I drink wine from a jug, ruby red, fat and round the taste. Your kisses still stroll across my tongue with it, though you are oceans away. Every filigree of connection the body makes from lips, around a breast, along a thigh, shiver down deep inside thick pink memory. Masks are hanging from the walls, crowding windows of small shops in the market of Canal de Canavecchio. Silver and peacock blue, raven black and scarlet, their shape-shifting visages await the gift of sight we alone can position them. Here is the place to lose myself. One step inside this space of gold, all children left behind, all worries, and the dent of daily life in the goblet of fancy evades recognition along with the name, the obligation of returning. Sheathed with disguise, it is free. I could do anything here. Venice is an old lover still wet with longing, her body unashamed, everywhere bridges over a maze of aqueous veins, the map of love's capillaries with some dead ends, some narrow ways, some bridges a gondola can only pass under if I lean heavily to one side while the boatman dances or against the wooden knowledge. You have to pay. Venice is sinking, but slowly enough. Gates can be erected to block the hungry tide that surges purling courtship between water and stone. Sea comes for me tonight. Maybe it carries our breath in the lake near your door, rain off our shoulders in Fahis Wood and Belgium. View from your purple tulip and uncut meadow street. Images of you clutter my mind's alleyways, slip like shadows between corner and canal. They rouse longing in a city of water and glass, liquid cold, fluid hot. Caravaggio dark, the sky is the sanguinous at sunset. Now mist inside shutters, shrouds the Venetian glitter of light, splayed on walls from red and blue buds in the Murano chandelier. Tonight is full moon, a mist of rain rings her wide-eyed light, loneliness, a single beam down the smudged waterway. If only this small light, or this dark night, or the seas in patience working at the foundations of this old wall, could pry the jar of the future momentarily, and you are there on a shore somewhere, waiting. This is a city of indulgence, and I pay the boatman twice if he bring you.
Impossibly she reached for the baby to encourage him and threw it around her shoulders before locking the door and going out. Outside, the ground was charged with atmosphere. A storm was brewing. All was silent and still. All had reached or were aiming for shelter. Most of the grounds were wide and spacious, but suddenly she noticed a narrow crooked path leading to a beautiful garden. The fragrance waxed and thunder filled her with fresh hope. As if in a dream, she danced down the little path. Each rose bush had a little statue beside it of fairy folk, all either beaming or pointing mysteriously. In the middle gushed a large and joyous fountain. The sound of the waters made her wild. She lay on the wind-blown flower petals and ripped off her panties. Waving her legs languidly, she exposed herself to the air, murmuring softly. She closed her eyes. Heaven, she never saw him watching. He'd never seen a form quite like the one that he'd just witnessed. Carefree, exciting, provocative. Each night he found himself at the same spot. Each night he beat her after a growing pattern. The last night he took time over her dress and appearance. Her last simple act of freedom, for the moment anyway. She put her hair up in combs and wore a long silk dress. Everything was the same. The mysterious bright, the mystery fountain. This time, the last time, she cupped her hands and drank from the water. Sighing the moonlight, she closed her eyes and murmured, "Please come," as she waved her long, graceful legs. His mouth found her, and she passed her lips in distant fashion. Heaven, so she thought.
Odysseus, their driver, I who played with their thoughts during the parting journey, iced water a match to my exaggerated mittens, but far away now with Greece itself, and basking in the abundance of avoidance the three of us had borrowed from three generations earlier. Years later, I banned on the red sands and listened to him yap nonsensically, still reading from his tattooed history given to him and indeed the rest of us. Hermes stood at the cave and waved an invitation at me. I didn't have the energy. Saliva painted the side of my jaw and I snored loudly with each breaking wave. Calypso taken for those years and bearing a child, teaching to be happy. She by his side is no Penelope. Don't let him get away. Thank you. This is one called Five Words, one I wrote here at the competition at the end of the night, so it's called Five Words. It is the invasive and influential tyro in us all, the pirate priest, the second parent, both illiterate in their teachings, that fucks us up. Each one a loving tug wielding a baton of responsibility to a dead generation. Life's conveyor belt delivering their blows, of incomprehensible responsibility. Banish them to where Hayday is, where his spade is digging. I will probably meet them there. This one is called Ephemeral Shankmare. I witnessed her again this evening, trod her secular past, simony and tow, embracing her future, clearly decorated with himself, desideratus, and he cock-flicking history's CV and sniggering at the audience, incisors and canines, euphoria and perspiration, torment fighting for its say, a diurnal rush to her finishing line. One day she will be dead right. Do one more. Called God's Own Medicine. You dangled in an outswitched frame, poppy full and bloating, boastful as a medal-earning child and sniffing Merlin's approval. God's Own Medicine nursed its way through those same cells that quenched the torment Telemachus held for you. The unreaching, pockmarked, and useless long arms you wore were drained of hugs and dying. They offered not an opportunity. Your unfortunate messengers, thieves of instruction, naked venom, brimmed inward with emotion. You were repeatedly scruples-free and mission-bound, deep in this addiction you refused to own. Common in us three tight-bound siblings was a traditional inability, infants donated. These airline tickets had somehow merely flown us back to our childhood, contraband included. I pulled from our family dictionary and served an ace each time. My labeled tongue, an unapproved ambassador. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. And next up we have Jennifer and Matthew. Jennifer.
After my first trip to Dublin, when I saw a lad in the shadow of a cathedral door, dressed entirely in a white tracksuit, with white get-up altogether, smoking crack or something, but he looked really pristine. Everything was pressed, it was incredible. And I was thinking about all the lovers that you have that are bad and you shouldn't be with them, but you are. I wasn't attracted to him, but okay, I'm going to stop explaining. First, thin and tall as a long-licked flame, he is white-hot. He has white everything. Ball-capped trainers, tracksuit, except for the dark stripes down his side. He kisses me outside the party, hands on my shoulder and cheeks, blessing me. Whispers, your skin is whipped cream, I'll melt you. Then, arm wrapped round my waist, he turns me inside, from friend to friend on a slow dance. Now closed in his pack of boys, like some old religion circle, he pulls a glass pipe from his hip. Lights the dirty diamonds inside, and they catch bright. When he opens his mouth, a missing tooth. Dark, rotting bases in others. I feel them curl in their little depths, and I press my lips together. So tight. So tight. Next week, if you fancy it, we have a poetry discussion at 7:30 here. John Dunn.
Thanks, Jennifer. And next up, we have Patricia Walsh.
So, middle ones of the air.
Sorry,
listen up.
Yeah.
Blows doors by others.
Right, okay. This damn poem is called Praise and Encouragement. I still don't know what irony is. Studying different the velvet desk has time from time to flare up and slip away and flicker into decay. Into pit-top, flip-top, lays a twist with cool memories and his dirty tricks. I reach across. I stick my switch that pops up alive again. Slowly cues up the sporty knife. I know it will pay well for me to get up, break down, make a cup of tea, return, pretend that's no habit. Clears from the cousin switching over, switching off to some fabric stillness. Then to fall for that all ends the bedtime. This is what perfection is. And this one is called Return to Receiver. On spur but spurred, I reach the point of all returns, albeit catapulted higher, higher, higher through inner space. I do declare, am I scared? Are you embarrassed? You answer with a lot of faith. One honest move will come to me surely. My treasure is worth all, much more than all the Saxon confession. Winds did wander in and out, planting, meandering. Nothing I know has stopped my heart close to your person, as a ring pin to your encrypted speech. Nonetheless, I can't return your voice. Here, I am finished. A final cry. Seek me not among the ashes of earth. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Next up we have Eileen Norden. Eileen?
It is to walk the fields on a spring evening, picking the flowers as I stroll along as the sun goes down I like to go into neighbors to sit and listen to their tea. They talk a lot about the old days, about going to the bog and cutting tops.
Across the windscreen. The high-pitched squeal gets to him. He darts straight for it, cowers once more. Yours. For breath a mist, tie a furnace, resolve pure steel. I take the lamp, umbilical to the dash, ease it towards me. Snow flurries in through the sunroof, down our legs, toe-poking the seat. We slept soundly last night, worse luck. I thought of the last two pairs of claws scrambling for purchase, the owls of terror. That was the final straw. Then the dawning burst through like silence, a feather-like ticking tick-tick from the cooling engine. Breathless, she steadied, this time avoiding the horn, clamping her feet around the driver's head rest. I don't recall starting to count. 19, 20, safety catch, 22, now. The waiting room. I pace up and down, ignore the vacant seats. The window pulls me back to view the entrailing pipes and blips that raster on and on. Toting a clipboard, a white coat hurries by. Hard drives must be ready and right to flake out another blizzard of paper. Mr. Tim Ford, a neutral voice at the doorway. That's me, an old gent drops his tabloid list to race from his seat. There is a problem. The anteroom door swings to and they're out of earshot. My thumping ribcage knows I must be next. There, onto this bench, ease the window catch. A feathery snowfall, drooling and metallic roofs. Not an SUV in sight. A wailing ambulance. Commando Spider drops down his bungee line. Someone calling my name. I step out. She's 10 years old, for God's sake. Damn this NCT. Some prose, okay? Prose piece. The cove. The tumbling noise again. It's a rattling sound like a tipper truck shedding a load of stones. Now a swishing, gravelly, fizzy sound penetrates the dense cover on this supposedly vacant island. Briars and bushes are forced aside to get a glimpse. That dumping sound again, more prolonged this time, like breakwater or split buildings. He emerges to a place as remote as the far side of the moon. The broken cliffs fall away beneath him for about 10 metres to the rocky shore. Off to the right, a tiny fjord, curved midway, reaches in from the ocean. He is alone. No forces are at work here, except Mother Lunar Nature imports, exports, Inc. The gentle swell that has allowed an easy landing at the island's far side is much more powerful here. On this lee shore, it funnels in at regular intervals, fluting the gorge, churning shingle to suspension, readily mixing pristine gravel. An occasional rope pushes further in with physicality, dislodging scores of large round stones at the top. The undertows pull finer shells and stones back, sandblasting, polishing rounded rocks and pebbles. This hydraulic cat and mouse game goes on and on, sifting and grading. The midday sun forms the end of a rainbow in a random spray. He pauses for a last look at the impossible anchorage, the weedy half-dried rocks, the devious reef. The scene is just as he remembers it from 3 decades ago. If any change, the undergrowth is now more dense, flowers more wild, aromatic. A quick scan with binoculars reveals a mink-like piece of driftwood rounding the headland. He exchanges his compass for a light nylon line from his knapsack. Making one end fast to a holly bush stump, in less than a minute he's flopping down a bed of warm gravel in the only strand at the top of the channel. Looking back past the forest, all along the coast, steep cliffs, small avalanches, and lovely hostile jungle stand guard over that steeply slanting mist. Resisting the temptation to check for a signal or text, he leaves his cell phone off while admiring the long white submarine in the sky. No sign of diving, closing his eyes, the act of doing nothing take over. It's so natural, eavesdropping on the oceanic mantra, the warm breeze. There are over 4 hours yet to go to his pickup. Even with the 1 hour hike through the profuse growth, that leaves plenty of time. This haven was and is not for sale, never to become a trophy for some absentee playboy. Surely those hardy maritime monks found a home here at some stage. Yet some felt the urge to perch further out on their wild gannetry. Perhaps the wise hermit made this his crusade retreat, justifiably omitting the coordinates from the annals. The next chance work, weather and social responsibilities permit, he vows to arrange a weekend here with just a tent and some basics. No laptop, just pen and paper, and then you definitely write the second chapter, or if not, the first verse.
No denying the Lee is full of poetry, that's for sure. If the Lee is full of poetry, then so is the Shannon. So we've got to call up the next poet from Limerick, Mr. Edward McGuire. Thank you for your support.
Tell me, how does this feel? But before you answer, think about that tree. Remember, in the fields behind your house, the one where we used to kiss when our feelings first began to bloom, where we took up one tonight. Carved the crude heart together in the young bark, where we inscribed each other's names on the clean inside. If you can see all of this, then maybe you can hear the sound of leaves rustling together in a tender breeze, sharing a rhythm, skin over skin, and sinew for sinew. Keep going. Follow this thought, the vision. The sound. Follow until, ever so suddenly, there with you, waiting in chill time, and shed leaves. And I'll ask you again, how does it feel? Does it feel like winter? Does it feel as though love has been stripped down around your heart? I feel it too.
This one's called Vitamin C. Another toffee kind of romance one.
At the breakfast table, I watch how you eat the orange. Every detail, from the twirl you give its body on the knife edge when undoing a slice, the nip you make in the skin, straightening for eating, to the drops of juice that bubble on your lips. At the breakfast table, as I watch how you eat the orange, I wish my eyes could follow the trail of vitamin C splashing down your gullet, follow round your body, in blood, into cell and organ. Wish I could see the work, its mechanics, and where the rest of us go wrong. All the while, sure, there is a secret, and like the droplets you dribble on your chin, there are glimmers of revelation for two possible things. One, why God made fruit by the blueprint of the sun, and two, how your face shines so bright, I can't look directly into it.
Thank you, Edward. And next up to the mic, we have Mr. John Ryan. John?
Basically deals with the fact that when we decide to remember things, we choose to remember them the way we want to remember them. Grey ampules disperse sky colours into grey. The feeling of autumn persisting as the warmer days run away. The sun is so more simple, not managing to reach the level of a ray. Dustiness, the accumulation of skin, used and deposited. There is another more poignant accumulation in heaps, a more considerable dustiness of memories. Reclaiming moments of a more formative time, changes into composition. Resolution and a very personal incentive now is retranslated and recovered, but now in subjective history. The way we spent our days germinated in classrooms, reading and being ready for some manner of adult life. The competition and the role play. Though a few resisting, most following in a way laid out by the others who had gone before. Into the pattern expected, identity shorn, so evaluated. And in the social sphere, the elegant and duly professed entered into top gear. Yet another confrontation for the post-school progress to achievement as expected for the greater measure, though for some only wait the humdrum. And so a time slot of life examined. How much use is language with charity abandoned? Each man and woman born defending their own records with words to legitimize every activity in partitioned utility. Then back to the daily grind, monochrome souls, outwardly florid, conflicted and tolerant. Thank you.
John, from one Ryan to the other, can we ask Sinead Ryan?
I don't know whether just the child, just medicine, just pain, just tears. We don't see, don't hear. Child died. Light sparkles in the air, crystals from the breath of the voice I had raised for whispering over my shoulder. My parents' fantasy is to see only silence staring at me, accusing you with echoes still of his voice in the air. It's been how long now? His part of my pain. So long, too long, since last I heard his voice. But memory of those words eludes me because I was present with my time. And that silence now is like a gust of pitch in the middle of my life, which unravels. This last one, I literally wrote because I was asked to write a poem with Ben Jimmy. Okay. Because the day. Alright. Ben's identity is out of the memory, the lady of boxes against Ted Shady. In a darkened corner, I'd like to warn her of her realist feelings and sorrow dealing. When the night is over, he looked over his shoulder for fear of a booking, sleeping and looking. And I'm sorry to tell, it was his only farewell. But behind him, he landed. That's the way we run then.
This is a song I usually have done, but I've written myself, but due to Dave's music, but I do that to tonight, hopefully. And it's called Me and Mrs. Jones. And this is it's the thorny question that you bring up when the sky turns black. Would I have sank or swam if you had never come back? If it's true that you're after, it's solid as bone. You put strength in my laughter. You built me a home, and it stands for now and ever after. Oh, I'd be lost without Mrs. Jones. Hours spent under cherry trees. We were christened by fleets of blossoms, and the truth poured so easily. Oh, how could I have ever forgotten? When the tide came in, I had my boat built, didn't deem it a sin that I did not feel guilt. At your heart I threw all my stones, and I really hurt Mrs. Jones. Now this is the part of the story where history turns a full circle, and Venus strikes off her conch shell, and the air smells of honey and myrtle. For all of my snarling and needless war pain, she's ascending my stair with the grace of a saint. Not mine to keep, she's on loan, but I finally have Mrs. Jones.